So today's Bible passage comes from Revelation 7. So after this, I saw four angels standing at the four corners of the earth, holding back the four winds of the earth to prevent any wind from blowing on the land or on the sea or on any tree. Then I saw another angel coming up from the east, having the seal of the living God. He called out in a loud voice to the four angels who had been given power to harm the land and the sea. Do not harm the land or the sea or the trees until we put a seal on the foreheads of the servants of our God. Then I heard the number of those who were sealed, 144,000 from all the tribes of Israel. From the tribe of Judah, 12,000 were sealed. From the tribe of Reuben, 12,000. From the tribe of Gad, 12,000. From the tribe of Asher, 12,000. From the tribe of Naphtali, 12,000. From the tribe of Manasseh, 12,000. From the tribe of Simon, 12,000. From the tribe of Levi, 12,000. From the tribe of Issachar, 12,000. From the tribe of Zebulun, 12,000. From the tribe of Joseph, 12,000. From the tribe of Benjamin, 12,000. After this, I looked, and there before me was a great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, tribe, people, and language, standing before the throne and before the Lamb. They were wearing white robes and were holding palm branches in their hands, and they cried out in a loud voice. Salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb. All the angels were standing around the throne and around the elders and the four living creatures. They fell down on their faces before the throne and whispered God, saying, Amen, praise and glory and wisdom and thanks and honor and power and strength be to our God forever and ever. Amen. Then one of the elders asked me, These in white robes, who are they and where did they come from? I answered, Sir, you know. And he said, These are they who have come out of the great tribulation, and they have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Therefore, they are before the throne of God and serve him day and night in his temple. And he who sits on the throne will shelter them with his presence. Never again will they hunger, and never again will they thirst. The sun will not beat down on them, nor any scorching heat. For the Lamb at the center of the throne will be their shepherd. He will lead them to springs of living water, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes.
Thanks, Amy. Today, it's going to be a slightly different format. I guess we've done something similar in the past, but it was like on Zoom only. So today, we're kind of just doing a bit more of a chat with Benny as opposed to a formal sermon. But the chat, I think, will be it'll touch on a lot of areas of theology, and I hope it'll be just as helpful as a sermon. Benny, I'll let you introduce yourself while I fix up this chair.
Okay, no worries. Hi, everybody. Yeah, my name is Benny. It's really good to be with you all. It's always great to be back with HPCC. And yeah, it's been a while, and but I'm always encouraged by you guys. So yeah, I work at the moment. I work for a life insurance company, and I work in IT. So yeah, that's what I do.
All right, so working IT, working insurance, what is your kind of adventurous long-term goal with this missionary stuff?
Oh, yep. Okay. Yeah. First off, I just want to say I'm heaps humbled to be here. Not an expert or anything. I've actually like never done any long-term work. I'm just a follower of Jesus, and I'm just trying to work out what that looks like. And so, this is just part of just sharing my journey. So yeah, and I hope to learn as much from you guys as well. The question is, what do I hope to do long term? What I hope to do long term is to make disciples of an unreached people group. So a place where it's very hard to ever hear about who Jesus is. And so to go there, to learn their language, and to live among them, to be their neighbor, and to invite them to read the Bible, to tell them stories about Jesus, and to serve them indeed as well. So all of the above. No real different to what we all do as Christians and neighbors here.
Just a reminder, if anyone has any questions at any point, just shout it out. If you're on Zoom, you can unmute yourself, and I will keep an eye on Padlet as well. So what's your kind of theological drive to go from IT in an insurance company, which sounds pretty safe, to a pretty adventurous like goal of moving overseas and sharing the gospel with people?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the reading from Revelation 7 is a big one. It's a future reality. It's a future hope. And I think it's a wonderful reflection of who God is and what he desires and his character. He desires that all people, all nations, from every people, language, tribe, would know him, would be in relationship with him through Jesus, and they're going to be worshiping him and to have a restored relationship. And that's what God desires, and that's just something. And so therefore it's right for all people to know this love that I guess I've been fortunate enough to know and experience. And so I want to be sharing that love with those people, particularly people, who tragically would, you know, might live and die never really hearing that truth. And so that's something that I think we can all be involved in. And so that's something. But yeah.
So I guess for us, like, we've all heard about Jesus, and probably all our friends have heard about Jesus, even if they're not Christians. Mm. Are there actually people in the world that could live and die without having heard of Jesus?
Yeah, that's actually a sad reality. And I think for me, it's something that I hadn't realized at all. Like, similar to you guys, I've kind of grown up here in Sydney, where we've got access to you know, many, many good churches just all around. And or even not that, you can, you know, probably get to hear the truth, the story about Jesus in some way. But I remember I was in a class in college, and they were just sharing about this place that I couldn't even pronounce, a place in Central Asia called Uzbekistan. And they were sharing, there were like 30 million people who would live and die never hearing the truth about Jesus. They might only hear a lie, that Jesus was only a prophet, Jesus never really died or rose again, but never really hear the truth about Jesus. And yeah, so sadly, that's a reality for many.
Do you have any kind of idea how many people around the world would be in that situation? Like, so you're saying 30 million in
just one place. No idea. I'm not good at maths, but
Joel and Amy are on Zoom. I don't know if they know, but feel free to shout out if they do.
I reckon they probably know. Joel and Amy. Too many, honestly. Any number is too many. And so that's I was just floored by that. And I was just sitting there, I was just convicted of that. And I was like, that's not okay. And that's not right. And yeah, and so that kind of started this little journey of, okay, well, how can we pray for that? How can we, help to change that?
Yeah. So tell us a bit about that journey then, from that point where it's like, wow, there's like a country bigger than Australia that like people have not heard about Jesus or not heard the truth about Jesus.
Yeah.
How did you get from there to like, all right, I'm going to go overseas to Southeast Asia?
A lot of little steps. It's not something I never intended this. I never kind of dreamt about doing this. But as a result of that class, that we're going to spend a trip to spend a couple of weeks getting to know people there, getting to meet brothers and sisters there and getting to see the place. And so, I was fortunate enough to be able to spend 2 weeks initially in Uzbekistan and to see what God was doing there. And I was just blown away. But if I'm really honest with you guys, some of you might have heard this story already, so apologies for that. But I kind of went into that trip going, that's too hard. Like, no way, God, I'm not going to be able to do this. But I'm going to say I tried, and then I can just cross it off and never think about it again. Hey, and so I thought about that. That was honestly my mindset going in. Like, I'm going to pray for these guys. I'm going to support them. But I know I can't do this. There's no way. And I think during that trip and in the months after that, I think the reasons that I had kind of put up towards God and say, I can't do this, mate, no way, God revealed in his kindness that they were just probably selfish lifestyle reasons that I kind of wanted to cling to. And so it was a process of God kind of refining me and challenging me and being able to see that God can enable me and strengthen me to serve. Yeah, Brent. Yeah.
I'll just repeat that for people on Zoom. So Brendan's asked, like, what were some, like, practical things that you saw that God changed your mind through?
Yeah, I guess part of it was seeing that to be someone that goes to serve people, you don't need to be a superstar. Like, you know, I guess previously, you know, the people that I'd seen that go overseas and work, you had to be a doctor, and I'm not that. Or you had to be a pastor, and I'm not that either. Often, yeah, I think spending time with some people, I could see that they were just Christians like me, just trying to work, to live, to love their family and love their neighbor. And I'm like, oh, that kind of blew me away, actually. Yeah, just seeing that some workers were doing essentially what I was doing, but I had just serving at church like you do. But you just kind of move down the road a bit, except you just move down the road 20,000 kilometers. And yeah, so.
Steve, yeah. Yeah, Steve's just asked, like, how's this happened financially? Like, you're leaving your job. How do you live?
Yeah. Well, initially I was hoping to take my job. And so I'm kind of talking to work about that for two reasons. The first reason is I need a story, like a legitimate story. Like, so actually with the people that I'm hoping to serve, if I went there as a, like, and I said I was a pastor, that kind of puts up walls. They've kind of got unhelpful thoughts of what a pastor actually does. And so that would actually be a stumbling block to sharing Jesus about them. So I was actually going to work and to be a neighbor. And so, yeah, that was the original plan. So that would have helped. I don't know if that's going to work now. There's some tax issues I've just found out really recently that might make that a challenge. But I guess I trust in a God that provides all things that I need. I've already seen his wonderful generosity to get me through college, which is heaps expensive, and I hadn't saved up that much. But yeah, I believe that he'll provide me a place for me to live and for food. And so, yeah, and that might be through partnership with churches. That might be using my savings and selling things. And, yeah. Good question. Thanks.
Yeah, so kind of on that, it sounds like you can't go over there just, it sounds like they don't want people to go over to possibly spread the gospel, right? Like, that's why they don't, if you go over as a pastor, it seems a bit weird.
Yeah.
And so I guess that brings up a bit of a dilemma, because I guess the Bible would encourage us to obey authorities that are over us.
Yeah.
But you're going over there actively disobeying an authority, it seems or at least like kind of subverting authority. So how do you reconcile that as a Christian?
Yeah, really good question. You're right, John. I'm reminded of like Romans 13, where we're to submit to our authorities. It's good to that. But what happens if the authorities has a law that says you can't evangelize, and has a law that this particular people group are not allowed to convert. So do we just don't evangelize? Well, I think our submission to the governments that God has sovereignly put in place is always in a way that doesn't undermine our submission to him. And so I respect every law there apart from that one law. And so, yeah, I'm hoping to, go and wisely in a way that doesn't endanger the locals, to wisely get around that.
Is there a, I guess hypothetically, is there a limit to a law you wouldn't break? Like to get the gospel out, like how many laws would you break? keeping this all anonymous, this is all hypothetical.
I don't know. I haven't really thought too much about how many laws that I break. Try not to break as many as I can. Yeah, minimal law breaking, I feel. Yeah.
All right. That was a bad question. That's a good answer to that question. So Steve's question is, what happens if you get caught?
Yeah. So just a bit about the context. Sadly, people have been caught. So in the past, I think it's between 5 to 7 years, there have been between 6 and 7 workers, pastors, who have disappeared. So there's a religious police there. And, I guess one of the most famous cases was, like, this is a government that is really disorganized just in general, similar to the government probably where a lot of you guys have come from. But in this one instance, this government was super organized. Like, it had, black vans pull up, block off, and took the pastor, a brother, Pastor Raymond, away, and no one's heard from them, no family, the church. And so that's a reality. Most believe he's gone home to be with the Lord. So that's probably the most extreme case, but that's what happens. I've actually met and studied with a brother as well. He similarly got arrested, and they have a re-education camp. It's a bit of a complex issue because it's weird for us because they've got laws for different ethnicities. So it's only if you're in this people group and if you're of that ethnic heritage, you can't do this. But if you're, say, Chinese, you have more religious freedoms. If you're Indian, you have more religious freedoms, but you aren't allowed to preach to this. You're not allowed to evangelize this particular ethnic group. Yeah. So it's a bit complicated.
And would your, as you imagine it, would your goal be to be reaching that particular people group?
Yeah.
Right. So you're going for like the hard choice.
Yeah. And it's a hard choice. And in many ways, I'm probably not even the best choice, if I'm honest. Because there's a lot of, like, you can hear my voice. I'm Australian. And so I want to go over there and they're gonna look at me and I might actually look the part, but because of the racial tensions, there's some animosity and things like that. But I guess when I was talking to that brother, we were just chatting about how many people are actually trying to love these people. And he was only half himself. So his mum was Chinese, but his dad was of that ethnic group. And he said there was only about 10 people that he knew. And one of the, his mentor was the guy that was kidnapped. And he said of all those 10 people, he was like the youngest and he was 35. The rest were like 60 and 70. And so, there's about 19 million of this people group and very, very few believers. And so, so that's the kind of reality.
How about we talk a bit about your difficulties getting over there? So for at least maybe like 3 years you've been trying to get over there as far as I know.
Yeah.
But you've made some small progress, but you're not there yet, obviously.
Yeah.
So why is it so hard to get into this country in Southeast Asia?
Yeah, okay. So for the vast majority of people, it's really hard to get a visa, a long-term visa, and that's with a lot of places. That's a challenge. COVID obviously was a challenge for everybody. I'm applying with an agency, so I'm still waiting to get approved and to do the health and the psych tests and things like that, as well as perhaps the support raising aspect of it as well. I'm applying for Australian citizenship. Long story, but that takes heaps of time.
Yeah. You're like the most Aussie sounding person I know.
Yeah, but not on paper. Hey,
not so, on paper.
Yeah.
can you actually share a bit about so you're not an Australian citizen, you're a citizen of another country.
Yeah.
Can you share a bit about that with us and how that's connected to your plans without revealing too much?
Yeah. I guess so it's really hard to get a long-term visa. And so there are workers that have been there just on three-month holiday visas that they just renew for years, really. And so that's one way to do it. But I guess they always face the risk of being kicked out of the country at any time, and they can't really do anything because they're just on holiday. But for me, I've got a unique privilege to have a citizenship, and I would have never thought it was ever a privilege, to be honest, really. I'll be fully honest, part of the reason why I kept my ethnicity was because I didn't even have to vote, hey, and it's such a pain. Anyway, so I can go there, and because I'm a citizen, they can't kick me out as easily. But the flip side of that is because I'm a citizen, then they could do a lot worse in terms of, say, you can get disappeared, and that's okay because you're their citizen.
Right, so it gets you access in, but then it gives you no protection if they were to treat you a particular way.
And more risks if I do the wrong thing.
Mm. And so is the part of the idea of the Australian citizenship then to give you some sort of protection when you're there? Is that?
The main one was actually because with the visa, if I leave too long, then you lose your... You lose your right to be, like, if you spend like more than 3 years overseas, and I hope to do that in a 5 year block, then they will just cancel your visa. So that was the main thing. And to really do any long term meaningful work, you're going to have to spend a lot of time overseas. So that was part of it. And when I told my uncle my plan, and he said, to be honest, mate, even if you got an Australian citizenship, I don't think they'd give you back anyway. So,
really?
Yeah. So I was like, oh, okay.
So there's
like, maybe a 1 or 5% chance.
Really? Right?
But yeah, I thought it was a good chance. But
yeah.
My uncle goes, nah, I don't know if they'll play ball.
Right. Yeah. So if you kind of cross the side of the government, and like that's kind of that's it. So you're going into like significant danger. Like you're consciously going into. Maybe not significant danger, but
I think there's potential. A risk of it. Yeah, there's a risk of significant danger. Like, but I think we it's also an emphasis to try and be wise in your witness.
Yeah,
like, yeah, because it's I guess there's all risk in life. Really, there's no guarantees. Like, we could be hit by a bus, and we've all got, we're all on the risk spectrum. I've got some brothers and sisters that I'm praying for, and they're going to places which I would consider way more risky, like Afghanistan, and some people even going to Ukraine at the moment because of the needs there. And so I'm like really encouraged and excited for them. But I guess that's a possibility. That I've got to have in the back of my mind and to be prepared for. And to, I guess the harder thing is to help the family, like my extended family, because I think it's okay if you are willing to prayerfully undertake these risks. It's just a bit harder if you've got family, particularly those that are dependent on you.
So speaking about family, as you go overseas, you'll be leaving family and other things behind. Yep. Do you want to tell us a bit about the struggles of doing that?
So in terms of family, I'm not married or have kids. I think if I were in that life situation, that would, can sometimes change things. Sometimes it doesn't, and that's okay. So for me, I've got a mother who's getting on, and she's had some recurring mental health challenges. I thank God that at the moment she's going well. And I've got a sister, a brother-in-law, and two nephews and a niece. And so, yeah, like, you know, it's hard to not be a part of their day-to-day lives. But I'm very blessed that they know Jesus as well. And so we can have those conversations. It's also a bit, it's a bit different. Wisdom might look different if your parents weren't Christian, and then, you'll have to kind of work out what does it mean to love and to honor them. So, yeah, I don't ever want to do it in a way where you kind of neglect my responsibilities. But, I think and it's a real privilege to love and honor our parents. And but I think something that I've had to learn recently is how do I journey with them? How do I help them see their roles in this as well, and the sacrifices that they are making? I think that's been a big journey of them, and but I'm very fortunate that they are supportive. My mum probably doesn't really want me to go, and you kind of get that. Like, well, at one level we get it, at one level I don't think I ever could. Because I guess for speaking on behalf of her, like, it just doesn't really make sense. Like, you know, if she's given up all her friends and family to start a new life here, to give us the best opportunity, like, just worldly speaking, it doesn't make sense, especially to go back to the very place you moved out from. You know, so she's come here to give us a better education, a better jobs, and we've got all of that. And so I think for her, there's probably a part where she goes, you're kind of throwing this away a little, even though she is a Christian. It's really hard to work through. But I think the thing that I'm trying to encourage her is that, you wanted to migrate here for a better life. And I found the best life. I found the best life in Jesus, and I'm thankful for her, and I'm thankful for you. And so if that's the best life, then would I not want that for others as well? And so, that's the kind of conversation. We haven't got as far as I'd hope. It's still a conversation, but hopefully it's something that she'll get to understand.
It'd be interesting to think about that a little bit more from the perspective of Asian culture, right? Honoring your parents in Asian culture.
Yeah.
So I guess honoring your parents can potentially look different across different. So it's like one command that God gives us, but could look different from person to person, culture to culture.
Yeah.
I guess in Asian culture, it's honoring your parents has a lot of overlap with obeying your parents.
Yeah.
Is that how have you like reconciled that in sort of a cultural sense? Like, have you done, or how's your mum thought through that in a cultural sense as opposed to a theological sense?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I'm probably not, don't always obey mum, and so that, I mean, I don't think.
And not saying that you have to, right?
Really,
saying,
always, always obey their parents. I do try as much as I can, and I think like we do want to honor our parents and we want to love them, but I think sometimes that might not always be just doing what they say. Like, there is a cultural element where we do want to respect and show them honor, and so I guess I think taking time to help them, not to just, I guess for me, something that I've decided is I'm heaps impatient. So if I made a decision, that's it. Like, let's just do this, right? I don't like waiting around. But I think God in his kindness, and, you know, part of the delay in going has actually been really helpful in that we've been able to, grow in that and to have more of a conversation, to have more of a space where that I can help try and communicate, and not just by words, but also in actions, which is really important in the culture. That I do love and respect her, but that may not always mean I do, she says. It's a bit different if you're a child and a parent, but but, you know, pretty old at the moment. So, yeah, as an adult now, you know, what does that look like? I think a big thing, particularly in Asian culture, is how do you look after them as they get older? That's a really big thing in the culture. And so that's something that I've chatted to my sister and my brother-in-law more about, so that in my absence, in the perhaps the short to medium term, I'm not going to be able to do as much of the day-to-day care. But something that I've suggested is, well, in the longer, medium to longer term, when she does get older and she probably requires a lot more care, then that's an opportunity for me to perhaps take more of a lead in that. So in this season, they'll probably have to carry more of that load, but in the future season, that's something that I'll gladly do. Yeah.
So just, it sounds like you've just had to talk about it a lot and kind of think into the future more than the average person.
And that doesn't come naturally to me, but also wanting to share with her as a Christian, because we share the same hope in Jesus, wanting to share with her the same hopes that we do share, and to just keep coming back to that. So that's still an ongoing thing.
We might start to wrap up. So I've got two kind of things I want to touch on. One is, what do you think it'll look like day to day? Let's just start with that. What do you reckon it'll look like?
Yeah, so probably the first 3 years or more, it would be working a job. I'm hoping that's a job that I can bring from Australia, just so that I don't have to learn a whole work culture as well. Then if I took a local job, and then a few hours a day with a language learner, learning a language, and then fumbling with that as you go out and make a fool of yourself, trying to order food and shopping and doing life stuff. Yeah.
So would it be right to say that your kind of life in Southeast Asia would probably not be too different than your life here? Like, it's kind of like a normal life.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, totally. I think Jesus's call for us to go and make disciples, it just looks really similar. Like, I think the language we do it might change, and where God might have us, but, you know, to love God, to love our neighbor, to go and make disciples, to teach them all that obey Jesus, to teach them to obey all that Jesus commanded us to do. A lot of that is similar across most spheres of life. And so that's something that you guys are kind of already doing. And I think one thing that God kind of has shown me, and I think is similar to you guys, is that we've already had to cross the culture. Like, coming and migrating here, life in Australia is different to perhaps life where your parents are from if you weren't born overseas. And so, there's some gifts in of that, and that's some stuff that God willing I can carry over in the new place.
So I suppose we kind of cross cultures quite naturally without knowing this. Like, say, even within this church, crossing the culture of the English congregation into the Chinese speaking congregation is like a bit of a hurdle sometimes. When you head over there, in terms of sharing the gospel, how do you think about crossing culture? Like, I assume that you're not going to share the gospel like you would to an Aussie on the street. Like, how are you thinking about sharing the gospel? Like, how would that happen?
Honestly, I haven't had I think what I'd like to do is learn from the people that are actually doing it in the day-to-day. So I probably don't want to kind of make too definitive of a call. Like, that's the way that it's got to be done. I'm going to be very open to learning how it's best done. But I think hopefully something that I can imagine happening is that, you know, as I get to know people and as they get to know me and hopefully trust me and not think I'm dodgy or whatever, you know, and invite them over for a meal and for a coffee or something, and to just chat about life and then hopefully to weave stories about Jesus there, or the Prince of Peace that I know, and hopefully continue to do that. And then if that develops, if they're open to that, then perhaps the invitation to read the Bible.
So it really is similar to, I guess, what we hope that we do day to day, maybe just a lot more intentional. I guess we can get sidetracked by day-to-day life, but you're kind of going there, living life with the intention of kind of making these opportunities and connections and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so I think, part of what we all do kind of naturally, you just have to think about it a bit more, because you're doing it perhaps in another language, and you just got to, and you're doing it in a culture that's different to yours, one that you don't know. So you're maybe a bit more conscious of, you know, not trying to step on people's toes or doing the wrong thing to offend them, but I guess the same hope. Yeah.
And last kind of thought. Question. Good question. Really, so the question was, what kind of church do you think you'll be a part of when you head over?
Yeah. So, initially, it'd be helpful to join a community. So I'm going to be going to a church that's probably not too dissimilar to this. We're going to meet in a building, and there's going to be fellowship, going to be here preaching from the front. And that'll probably be the start. But I think long-term, church is probably not going to be in a church building. It's probably going to be gathering in a house. Yeah, probably maybe really similar to kind of what's going on here. Like, we're just going to have food. Well, this is what I'm imagining. I don't know. It might be totally different. But, there's going to be food. We're going to talk, and we're going to, hear from God through his word. But might come through a story that I tell. And if they're keen, then maybe we can read the Bible together, or part, an excerpt or something.
Yeah. Oh, we'll go Jerrica then Brendan. Are there any churches there?
Yeah, great question. There's heaps. There's some mega churches. There's like, I heard one is like 20,000. But sadly, most churches don't teach what the Bible teaches. I've heard, I don't know, I haven't experienced this to be true myself, but I've heard that the majority of churches just, you know, will tell you that God wants you to be rich and not sick and that kind of thing. And so that's, but they're mainly for those that are of Chinese background or Indian background. In terms of church for this particular people group, I thank God that there are brothers and sisters, but they're not meeting in buildings. They might be meeting in kind of little underground meetings in houses and things like that. So that's,
and is that because they're not allowed to go into those other churches?
Yeah, they're not allowed. And
So there's like racial laws saying if you're of this ethnicity, you can't come in.
So the Chinese, the Indians, and those that have migrated, there's a lot of foreign workers from Nepal and Bangladesh. They're like, you do whatever you want to them, but our people, you can't preach to them. Yeah, it's really weird. They've got a kind of like reverse apartheid law. So give you an example. So for university, 95% of the places are reserved for this people group. Doesn't matter about marks, doesn't, nothing like that. And if you're in a company, the boss has to be this person. It's weird, right? But that's just how it is, and that's life over there. So yeah, it's hard to get heads around, but that's the way that country works. And
the question was for the people at home, if everything goes well, what's your long-term plan? Like, what would you like to see happen 5-10 years? And what's,
I guess I'm open to going long-term. I guess if I'm honest, it takes you ages anyway, just to learn a language to a point where you're fluent, and then people need to know you, and then you got to work out culture. So, you know, like after 3 years, you're still kind of like a 5-year-old, you know, maybe a 10-year-old in terms of your language ability. And then it might be another 5 years after that where you've actually made some real good friends. And then it might be years after that. So I guess I'm prepared for the long haul, because I think in reality, your opportunities are going to be far and few between in those years. So I'm open to be there really long term. And I think the thing that will probably affect my decision to come back will probably be, you know, if mum needs heaps of care, and then at that point, that's a conversation. Good question. Thanks, man.
A question that some people might have is like, is you going overseas, is that a kind of bigger expression or a better expression of faith than us staying here? Like, how does that work out? What is it?
Like I said, honestly, I feel like it's something that we all Christians, as followers of Jesus, as disciple-making disciples, this is what we are all called to do. And we all do that in different ways. I use the analogy, perhaps not the best, but, yeah, it kind of feels like where we move. And when you move, right, you move into a different place, the culture is different, isn't it? Like if you move to the Shire, culture is different. Yeah, you know, Western Sydney, it's the best part of Sydney. We know it's different, right? So yeah, the culture is different. So I feel like I'm just hopefully doing a lot of the similar things that I already do and a lot of what you guys already do. I'm just moving a bit further away, and the culture there is different, and they just so happen to speak a different language. And so I need to get up to speed. So I really don't feel, it's that much different.
Right. So it's not about feeling guilty for staying, no. But it's just like you're like kind of thinking about how you can share the gospel in a context that you will be in.
Yeah.
And maybe what we should take away is we should think about how to share the gospel in the context we're in.
Yeah. And so like, honestly, over coffee or, you know, afternoon tea afterwards, if there's things that you found are helpful when you invite your friends over for, you know, a meal, and you thought, oh, this is a great way that I could weave a Jesus story in, I'd love to hear it, because that's some stuff that I need to learn as I think about heading over there.
All right, we might wrap up there. Benny, do you want to tell us what ways can we help you in your journey over to Southeast Asia?
Please be praying. Like, I feel like I've got heaps to do and I'm always behind. Hey, like, so, pray that, that I'll get my, application stuff done, and that all the health checks and the psych tests come back okay. I mean, pray that the work situation, or that I'll keep growing in my trust of God financially is, Steve raised before. Yeah. And, that I'll keep, knowing how to honor mom and to keep that convo with the family, that journey with the family about, seeing them partnering in, mission as well.
And is there a way we can keep up to date with you, or is it just kind of like for the moment, just when you visit, we just get a bit of an update?
Yeah, I guess, I'd have more to share once I kind of, if I get accepted by the agency, and then, you know, maybe what partnership might look like. But yeah, at the moment, just really thankful for you guys' encouragement and prayer already. It's always great to be here. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. We'll wrap up there. We've gone a bit over time. No. I found the chat really interesting. I hope you guys did. Thanks for the questions as well.